Welcome everyone to the West Print Sports Review here. The show is brought to you by West Print. They're based at 9 Pereri Street in New Lynn. Their number is 09-827-8531, or you can email them on westprint.co.nz. And they're real proud sponsors of the show, and they're great sponsors. Wow, what a weekend it has been of sports. Since leaving you last Monday, New Zealand has 4 golds in the Olympics, and that's just a great start. We've got 10 to 11 medals, and we may have some more today. So that's been great. And of course, the leading light of this Olympic campaign has been the rowing. And you know, this next guest I have is a real good one. You know, she's been a trailblazer. Her, Stephanie Foster, Brenda Lawson, the Ever Swindells. In a time where, when she was rowing for New Zealand, it was very much a stuffy old boys type organisation. She's been a real trailblazer. She stands up to bullies. She's a real good person. Please welcome to the show former double world champion Philippa Baker Hogan. Good afternoon, Philippa, and welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Eamon. Yeah, thanks for that introduction. An interesting one.
Yeah, well,
thank you.
No, well, I think, as you know, we have a look at the rowing program, especially when it comes to women, and I know that you were one of the leading lights within New Zealand rowing that actually, you know, a lot of these medals needed to be credited to you, people like Stephanie Foster, people like Brenda Lawson. So, no, that's a genuine comment from me. So we might as well rip into it. Well, Philippa, this regatta has been absolutely brilliant for New Zealand in the way of rowing. 3 gold medals, 2 silver medals, and we really have, probably many of us say, we have overachieved. I don't believe we have. I believe the rowing program has been fantastic. What were some of your thoughts on there?
Oh, look, just epic. It's simply outstanding. And I mean, I guess it's always easy to look back and say, "Oh, yeah, we thought it, you know, thought they could get them all." But I think if you were within the sport, most of those, you know, it's probably, you know, everyone's honest. It was only the men's 8 that people weren't completely sure of. And when I say that, you know, I think the women's pair, you know, women's pair were, you know, double world champions 2 years in a row. Emma Twigg, she's. You know, it's just amazing. It's fantastic for her, but she's experienced. She's come, you know, she's had those couple of 4ths and a 6th, and it was probably really just sorting out the rest of her life and getting the headspace right, because she's always had the ability. So, you know, actually was pretty confident she was certainly going to get a medal. And, you know, if you go to the women's 8, defending world champions, and Kate, you know, of course, came up with that silver. And the women's double, changing that crew, but, you know, defending world champions as well, and came up with the medals. So, yeah, I mean, we've certainly lived up to, or delivered even more than expectation, but just tremendous.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you there, Philippa. Like, because it started off with a silver medal in the double sculls to Brooke Donoghue and Hannah Osborne, and of course that remaining crew, they looked probably the form crew during that regatta in the double scales.
Yes, they did. No, they did. They looked in that semi-final where Brooke and Hannah came up against the Romanians. Very strong-looking woman. Very, you know, just fiery out of that start. A high rate. And, you know, it was a semi, but, you know, yes, you wouldn't put it completely on the line. You know, you wouldn't expect Brooke and Hannah to, you know, to die across the line for it, with a final coming up, you know, a couple of days later. Mm. But you know, they did look a bit vulnerable for the gold medal at that stage. I was just thrilled. I think they put together a brilliant race. I think they got... If they could have won, they would have won, but they just couldn't beat those Romanians, but they got a very well deserved silver medal.
And of course, then we go to Gala and Prendergast. They were fantastic during this regatta, you know, breaking world best times.
Mm.
And, you know,
mm.
I, You know, when you go, you've been in Olympic finals, Philippa, and nothing is for certain. But when I watched that, they were just so brilliant. They just looked the best crew there by a country mile.
Yeah, they did. They're just a class act, you know, and they've had this, you know, this developing combination for a number of years now. They're at that kind of perfect, you know, kind of age and stage in their life, 27, 29. The interest for them was, were they going to be doubling up and doing the pair in the eight? Because, you know, I guess we always would, you know, getting a couple of medals was great, you know, to lose a gold maybe for another medal was always going to be, you know, if they could get a gold, you know, two golds or one gold, that was the real challenge. And of course, they actually delivered on that with the gold in the pair and then the silver in the eight. They certainly were, and I think it showed how tough that was, really, though, in that the Australian pair, also of excellent, a slightly younger pair, they were doubling up in the pair and the four. They won the four, and then they did have to come back out into a semi-final of the pair about 3 hours later, and they missed the final. So, you know, it showed how tough that was. That regatta got moved around a little bit because of conditions. So, you know, in the end there, Kerry and Grace had three races 3 days in a row, and that's pretty tough. But just a class act and such a well-deserved Olympic gold medal in that pair.
And, of course, you know, this is a story, you know, I've been following. It's a brilliant story. Emma Twigge, fourth Olympics, you know, so close in London, so close in Rio. And I've not been a rower myself, but I think she ran the perfect, well, she rode the perfect race in that final. I believe she rode the perfect regatta. What were your feelings on Emma Twigge's event?
Yeah, look, she looked... She was dominant, and I guess she's a person. I mean, interesting enough, I mean, I don't know Emma that well personally, but after the last Olympics, and I didn't contact her, but I remember it's like 6-9 months later when I heard she'd retired, and just from my own perspective and how long it can take you to get over, you know, not getting an Olympic medal, which was my story in the end.
I
just felt like, you know, she's always had the ability. She had it in her to do it, to win it. And so it's just, you know, she, of course, worked through that journey herself, and it wasn't easy coming back for a number of reasons. But, you know, she's got a great coach there, Mike Roger. He's, he was a rower of my era. And I think this could be Mike's first world championship medal, you know, first actual medal. He's been an elite coach for a number of years. He's very popular. He was a very good boat move. And I think, yeah, just the whole thing, I think having that headspace right, she had all the ability. And I think she did race the perfect race, and that she didn't really want to, I think for her in a headspace, she didn't really want to have to come from behind too much. She probably is capable of coming from behind, but she just got out, you know, within that last first 500, just got a boat, nearly a boat length on them, and then could just dominate that race. So just a brilliant, you know, and New Zealand's first Olympic gold medal in the women's single scull.
Yeah, fantastic. And of course, then the women's eights, I thought at one point they were going to sneak up on Canada and just grab that goal, but the Canadians really went out quick.
They did, yeah. No, look, these eights races, you know, some of the smaller boats can be won in slightly bigger margins, and you would have seen it in some races. The eights are always incredibly close, going to be incredibly competitive, and, you know, doubling up, I just take my, you know, hat off so completely to Gower and Prendergast, because they're just tough. There is no settling. It is just a sprint all the way. But, you know, there's stories like the Canadians women's eight. I mean, I was in Barcelona when they won in 1992. And in fact, they are the only other people that have ever won two, well, have now, have the only woman who've won two Olympic gold medals was a woman, Marnie McBean, who's actually the current chef commissioner of the Canadian Olympic team. and her partner was Kathleen Heddle. They won the pair and the eight at Barcelona Olympics, and four girls in the boat won the four and the eight. But Kathleen Heddle passed away of cancer about 6 months ago. Marnie McBean's the chef de mission of that Canadian Olympic team. So there would be lots of stories within there, and there'd be even a thing of, you know, doing it for someone like, you know, Kathleen, such a hero, heroine in Canada. So the Canadian woman raced an incredibly gutsy race, took it from the start, and, you know, and New Zealand, I think, just did everything they could. And it was a fantastic silver medal. And to see them so very happy about that, and they should be, because you could have the view as defending world champions that they lost a gold, but, you know, the Olympics is a different scenario. And, you know, those women have now, all of them, they've got an Olympic silver medal, and that's amazing, and they raced a great race, and they knew that.
Yeah, they certainly did. And, of course, then we go with the men's eights now. There's a lot of good stories behind that, Hamish Bond. But then you also speak about Tom Murray and Michael Brake. Probably could have medalled in the double scales, but they took the sacrifice and said, we're going to head towards the eights. They got on a last chance regatta in Lucerne to make the Olympics. They started second off in their heat, but that repercharge, I spoke to you on Thursday, I felt, ooh, this, they could medal, but we didn't know which colour it was, but it was just a brilliant effort. It was fantastic to watch.
Brilliant. It's got to be one of the most historic races in New Zealand Olympic history. Yeah. And like, you know, all those stories, like you said, people know obviously Hamish Bond, and that's just, you know, triple Olympic, you know, Olympic champion, New Zealand's first to ever win three Olympics in a row. You know, his story from the pier, with Eric Murray was epic enough, then going into cycling and winning a Commonwealth bronze medal, coming back. And I guess that was the thing. Many of us, you know, truth is, Hamish Bond won the pair at the New Zealand Nationals this year. You know, you're kind of like, why isn't he in that New Zealand pair that's qualified, that already got, second or third at the last World Champs? You know, he could definitely have got a pair. But it was... you couldn't believe, you know, there's no way I could believe they could get a medal, you know, a few months ago, even winning the Olympic qualifying regatta. And like you say, but bringing Murray and Brake, who have won a world championship pair, convincing them, you know, the whole story, Tony O'Connor, charismatic Irishman, done a fantastic job, but they, I think, you know, and they absolutely deserve everything. And I think they'd even say themselves, though, you know, COVID, and I've heard Hamish say it, COVID for them, giving them the extra year, the work and how, you know, bringing on those young guys has made a huge difference. But still to go out in an Olympic final, definitely thought they were capable of a medal after that, good heat and then a very good repercharge. But they just took it to them, and to push through Germans and British rowing, who are just dominant for so many years, an amazing 8-9 men there, Olympic champions.
And of course, if you take Hamish Bond out of that group, the average age is about 23, 24. So, you know, in years to come, that crew's going to stick around for a while. I suspect that we could see more medals at World Championships and at Olympics in the eights.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think, you know, it was a very, all hats off, actually, you know, to outgoing CEO Simon Pedersen, who's been gone for a while now. We've got a new CEO, Jeff Bowery, and to Judith Hamilton, the High Performance Director of New Zealand Rowing. There's been a few changes in some personnel and coaching, and Tony O'Connor coming in, for example, in the last 18 months. But there's been this big investment in the Colgan Foundation in the eights. Eights are an incredibly expensive cruise with the numbers of them for a sport like New Zealand Rowing. But it has paid off. And I think the great thing is, if you kind of look over the last 20 so years, there's been some outstanding, you know, male performances like the Rob Waddells and the Eric Murrays and Hamish Bonds, but actually probably, you know, more consistent women performances.
Yeah.
And the growth, you know, by women would, you know, far outnumber men in the sport, or definitely do outnumber the men. I think this is, and we're competing against the rugbys and the basketballs and those very professional sports, but it's a great opportunity for New Zealand rowing to grab, you know, to inspire young men and to keep building those APES programs. Because I think men in particular, you know, they love those big boats.
Absolutely. Well, I have to say, Philippa, I've really enjoyed our conversation today. It's been really enlightening, and it's good to have a person with such great knowledge on the show.
Oh, look, thank you. I've enjoyed the opportunity, and all the best to your show, and now we move into the kayaking, eh? So
yeah, yeah, go Lisa Carrington. Yeah, hopefully another two or three goals and we can start celebrating. Well, thank you very, very much, Philippa, and you have a great day.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I will. Thank you.
Cheers. Okay, that was Philippa Baker Hogan, and what a fantastic lady to come on here. She really explained the rowing to us, and it was, you know, she explained what was happening at New Zealand Rowing. Well, I better move on, and we'll get Brian McLennan up next to speak a bit of NRL. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Review here on Planet FM, and of course now we come to the NRL part of the show, and joining me, my old mate, ex-Kiwis coach, ex-Leeds Rhinos, ex-New Zealand Warriors coach, Bluey McLennan. Good afternoon, Bluey, how are you, mate?
Yeah, doing really well, thanks, you?
Yeah, good, been watching that Olympics, have you?
Yeah, but, yeah, stayed up late Saturday night actually watching some stuff, and no, it's been awesome.
Yeah, it certainly has. Well, we might as well kick off the show. We were speaking last week off here when we were saying, do you reckon the Warriors are going to release RTS early? Do you want to speak about it? Oh, no, we'll leave it for next week. Well, Rogers departed the Warriors, and, of course, he's been a great servant of the club.
He certainly has. He's been an absolute professional. The young fella's got really good morals and character, and we wish him all the best for his journey with the Blues, and hopefully he can progress through there, and his ultimate goal is to obviously play for the All Blacks. So all the best for Roger for doing that.
Yep, well said, Bluey. Wow, the Warriors, They've broken that losing duck. They had a real close one over the, but the big good thing is they grounded out a win, 18-16 over the Tigers. Ewan Aitken double, but some of my thoughts was O'Sullivan's kicking game was very, very good. Bluey, what was your thoughts?
Yeah, look, when you get your kicking game right, that can turn an average set into a great set. And you can't do it the other way around. If you had a great set and you kick poorly, it ends up being a poor set. So that really helps. I think Dallin Watene-Zelezniak has just been, each game he's played for the Warriors, he's been so busy. He's been really huge. Aitken was good. I thought Bailey Thurinen was really good on the day, but probably the one thing that changed the dynamics of the game was the Murdoch Masala hit on Dane Laurie.
Yep.
And that changed the complexity of for their defence and defending West Tigers, because Dane Laurie's been their key guy for creating chances. So, big raps to all the Warrior boys. It's, you know, they barred up. They all barred up and really competed, and it was a well-deserved one.
Hoping you were saying that they hadn't got a new sponsor by chance, but after hearing that, okay, but yep, fantastic win by the Warriors. Next up for them is the Sharks, and they've still got a chance of that top eight. The Roosters 28, the Eels 0. Teddy Tedesco, very, very good. And Joey Manu, there's talk about him. A Warriors put in an offer for him.
Oh, look, Joey Manu's an exceptional player, and he got named on the wing for the Roosters because they've just got turmoil in their outside backs in terms of injuries. But Joe, he can play 5'8", centre, wing, fullback. If the Warriors did manage to pull off getting him over here, be interesting to see where the club would play him, because he's got the ability to play in all those positions. For mine, I would have him at fullback. Like big fullbacks, I think Tom Trbojevic, for me, is the best fullback in the world.
Absolutely.
You know, and you're watching what Latrell Mitchell does offensively. It's just crazy. And James Tedesco, of course, you know, is the reigning, you know, New South Wales and Aussie fullback. And he's pretty big too. He's around the 96, 97 kg mark.
Yep, absolutely. Also, the Broncos, they had a win 37-18 against the Cowboys in the Queensland Derby. Jordan Rickey, he looks a real good player.
Didn't he just? God, he played well. And really good for the Broncos to play at home, and there was a good crowd there supporting him. So, you know, they got to feel the love, and, you know, they got to feel what it's like being good. And sometimes when you're in a slump, you know, it's hard to see the positives. And for the Bronx, that was a really timely win for them, and hopefully, you know, they can jag a couple more before the season finishes.
Yeah, and of course, then the Knights had a 34-24 win over the Raiders. They're still on the hunt for the top eight, but then we go to the Storm. Well, I texted you last night. They are just so good to watch. And it's not just the new players like Dean Aramia. He's a Melbourne kid that came through the system, gets a hat trick. But the guy I'm really enjoying watching has been Jerome Hughes, Bluey. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, he's a walk-up starter in the Kiwi team that's picked. It's been wonderful watching his progression through the Melbourne Storm. You know, he's so quick. He's so smart with his decisions. You know, and I thought his other Kiwi teammate, Brandon Smith, was really good too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and their tandem of bringing on Harry Grant, who's just come back, is actually going to make them better, because Munster was probably a little bit off yesterday, which makes them scary. Melbourne are the red hot favourites at the present moment.
Well, they certainly are, Blue, and of course, you know, I've just the way they play, you know, they're just so good to watch, they're just so quick. But a side that's in third place, but I think has been playing brilliant football, are the Rabbitohs. 50 points to 18 over the Dragons. And we spoke, I watched that game, and I can tell you something right now. The big four we spoke about, Cook, Reynolds, Walker and Latrell, they really ran amok against the Dragons.
Yeah, they did. And offensively, the Rabbitohs are going to be very hard to play against for all teams. And once they narrow down their defence, which is what they'll be working on. And they've got the master in terms of, coaching and having a team right at the right end, part of the season in Wayne Bennett. So they're a really interesting side to watch. And I think if they can nail their defence and get that right, they've just got points in them. So, you know, they are a threat. We've spoken about it before, and there's still, 5 weeks to go, but, you know, South and Manly look like the two teams that, will threaten Penrith and Melbourne.
It certainly will, and of course tonight there's the Titans versus the Dog and the Sharks, minus Sean Johnson versus the Sea Eagles, and I can actually see the Sea Eagles and Titans winning both of those matches to make the race for the eight more congested as well too.
Yeah, for sure. But it has been hard picking them this week. I've felt like I thought the Raiders would beat the Knights, but you know, the Knights played well, and they got a young kid who's come back, like Bradman Best.
He's good, mate.
Geez, he's a special. But yeah, so it has been hard to pick. I'm not too sure on the Titans game, but Manly could run up a score here with the form they're in at the moment.
Oh yeah, especially with Tommy Tebow the way he's playing. Just some more stories on the Rugby League World Cup. The organisers are speaking to the Australian Aborigines and the New Zealand Maoris to possibly take a team over to the Rugby League World Cup. What's your thoughts on that, Bluey?
I haven't given it any thought at all, really. I'm just hoping everything gets handled well. It's become a disaster. So I haven't really I'm not going to comment on it because I haven't really given it deep thought.
Okay. And, fair enough.
Yeah, going to say something, I've got to make sure I get it right. So,
No. And that's true as well too, because you have a look at it. Like to me, it's. I think the organisers of the Rugby League World Cup are really struggling at the moment, and with Australia and New Zealand gone, it probably throws their tournament into a bit of chaos as well, too.
So it certainly does.
Well, how do you think that the Warriors will go against the Sharks, Bluey? Do you reckon we can win?
Yeah, I think we're a definite chance, for sure. And plus they're without Sean, which is their main guy to push the Sharkies around, but I would say that the Warrior boys got a bit of confidence out of it. They were terrible the week before against South, but the week before that against Penrith, they were, they competed really well. So on the whole, they've against teams below them, around them, they've competed really well. So you pointed out the value of a kicking game, Piggy, and it's vital, can turn poor sets to good sets. So they take that in against the Sharks. They're a real chance because they've got some points in them.
And certainly have, Bluey. Well, as usual, it's always great to have our Monday chat, and hope you have a good rest of the week, and we'll catch up again next week, young Bluey.
Too easy. Thanks, mate. We'll catch you later.
Catch you later. Cheers, Bluey. Bye. Okay, that was Bluey McLennan. God, he's such a good analyst of the game, isn't he? Okay, next up, we're going to talk a bit of football with the Olympics, the Ollie Whites and the Football Ferns with former All White Noel Barclay.
Just to get to know you. I was just a little bit shy. God willing, I was ready to try to show you. Felt a little funny, but it was really no joke. I wanted to prove my love in every word that I spoke. But the action speaks louder. The action speaks louder than the words. The action louder than the words. I loved you just the way you were. Somehow I had to find the nerve to tell you. Oh, baby, just to tell you. So I did what a man must do. I walked right over to you and I was asking, babe, let's go dancing. I felt a little guilty, but hey, committed no crime. I wanted to love you, love you and love you for a long, long time. But the action speaks louder. You know the action speaks louder than the words. The action is so much louder. You know the action speaks louder than the words. Oh, I can't wait until I'm holding you. And there's no But the action speaks louder. The action speaks louder than.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just waiting on Noel Barclay, so I've sent him a text. So we'll listen to a bit more music. I'll have one more attempt, and then I'm going to have to do the football part by myself, so I do apologise. So I'll play a bit more music. Hopefully on the other side we'll have Noel on.
Action.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Review. Yes, we got him back on air, former All White and my good mate Noel Barclay to speak about the Ollie Whites and Football Ferns campaign. Hello, Mr. Barclay, how are you?
Yeah, I'm back and apologies for the delay.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. Well, we better rip into it. The Ollie Whites went out in a very, very heartbreaking way in the quarterfinals on penalties. But, you know, the Ollie Whites campaign has been a fantastic campaign. 1-0 win over Korea. A 3-2 loss to Honduras. A 0-0 draw against Romania. And a 0-0, and of course, going out in penalties to Korea. Great to see Chris Wood on the side, but I have to say, these are the players that have really stood out for me. Noel, Joe Bell, Elijah Just, Nando Pineka, and Giovanni Stensnes, and of course, the goalkeeper that was given a bit of a hard time last Monday, but Danny Hayes should be credited for standing by Michael Vowed.
Yeah, look, Eamon, what a roller coaster. We went from the highs of beating Korea, population of 51 million, and then losing on penalties, which is the cruelest way to go out and to lose to a team who previously won all of their games, and looking like they could go pretty close. So, yeah, look, and we had a blip in the middle, which was terribly unfortunate. I couldn't believe so many people getting stuck into Michael Wood. It was brutal. The commentator, I wanted to strangle him on the night because he just kept reminding us every 5 seconds. But he's a good kid. I've known him since he was 15, and he's got a mistake in him, and he's learning. But again, like Danny had said, he's 22. You know, it was just starting, and thank goodness he was able to redeem himself in the last two games, and he was outstanding. It was great, and all of the players that you mentioned, I couldn't agree more. There was a few players that that probably made it pretty clear that they're not ready for that level. I wouldn't name them, but all the ones that you've named, absolutely. Stansness for me was the best of all,
yeah.
And I think we really missed him, having him in midfield. And had we had, you know, Winston fit and maybe Boxall there, I think it could have been a lot different. Also, Stammer suspended was a disappointment because he is a class player. He really has a big future, and I know that Danny really rates him. So yeah, look, we did great. You know, the population is at 50 million, 10 million, and 20 million, and Japan couldn't beat us, and that just tells me that we are pretty well set up for the future with a bunch of players who are actually trying to play. Doesn't always work, and doesn't always please everybody when we knock the odd long one, but they're trying to play, and it's a bit special, and I think the future's great.
I think the style which we're playing is actually quite an adventurous styling. You know, we look towards the All Whites, like, you know, a lot of the side is going to be involved in the All Whites. And the big thing is, you imagine once we get Ryan Thomas back, Supri Singh, you're talking Michael Boxall. You know, players like of that calibre will actually, this stands well for the All Whites, and hopefully New Zealand football can get them a few more matches.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, there's competition now for places, you know. So, yeah. I mean, one of the problems for New Zealand was that the squad was so small, and trying to play 4 games in 10 days was, you know, a big ask for some of those people. Some of them played every minute. And I think in World Cup qualifiers and so on to come, we're going to have a little bit more depth. Obviously, it's open. Who knows what's going to happen with COVID next year in terms of the qualification. I hear it's going to be up in the east, which is a bit odd. But, yeah, look, I mean, Qatar, I mean, we're all sitting waiting around. We have to see who we're going to play in the international continental playoffs. Should we get through in Oceania? But I don't, it doesn't really matter who we get now. And we used to hope that we could get Asia because we might beat them. But right now, I think, you know, we can hold our head up against anybody that comes along. And another year for these kids in professional environments, all progressing, all doing well. You know, they're going to be in their prime. So it's keep Woodsy and Thomas and maybe Barbaroussis and Winston Lee. Keep those guys fit in Boxall. And who knows where we can go. It's never been better for men's football.
It is, and I think, you know, like the depth we've got and the quality of players, it's been so good. Well, I'm going to have to move on to the football, Ferns, and to me, I think, while we didn't expect much out of them, they were very, very disappointing. I just feel that Michael Burgess wrote an article in the Herald, and I'm tending to agree with Michael on this. There needs to be an overhaul before the 2023 World Cup, whether it's a new coach or whether we need to bring in newer players. I don't know what your thoughts are, Noel.
I did read that article from Michael, and I like a lot of the things he was saying. I mean, the number one thing just is that there will be a new coach because Thompson Manny, his time has gone, and he's moving on, so there definitely will be. But I think in conjunction with that, you're absolutely right. I mean, it does concern me that... And that, look, I can understand that, but a lot of those girls that are playing, especially the ones that are 100 cap plus, and they're all excited about the 23 World Cup, if that's the case, and no disrespect at all, I don't mean that, because they've served their country amazingly, but it is a problem because there's not the talent coming through to actually challenge those players. And if we don't have an introduction of youth and we don't have an overhaul, we're gonna struggle on our own doorstep. And unfortunately, when you see what Australia are doing, I mean, they're on a roll, and we're not. And we got 2 years to try and fix it, which is actually not that long. It's a massive job, a real think tank required, and they need to be full time. They need to be playing, and they need to be in camp. They need to live together. They need to live and breathe football for 2 years if we're gonna stand any chance of not sort of making a bit of a mess on our own doorstep.
Yeah, I have to agree with you because, you know, that concerns me because, you know, the main aim of probably the 2023 Women's World Cup for New Zealand would be, the big goal they'll be achieving is to get to a second round. No.
Yeah, and you know, who knows? I mean, they'll play in Auckland, of course, because you've got Eden Park, and there's more teams, so the quality is maybe not as good. And you get a good group like the Ollie Whites did, you've always got a chance. But it still comes back to whoever's going to play, they need to be playing professionally. They need to be playing every day. They need to live and breathe football with a focus on June 23, where they're absolutely they're as strong and quick and fast as they can possibly be. And we need to try and find some talent along the way. There's only 13,000 participants in female football in New Zealand. It's growing a lot, but it's still small. So, yeah, big job ahead, and it's exciting, but they've got a bit of catching up to do, I'm afraid.
Yep, I have to agree with you. Well, no, I've really enjoyed this quick chat today, and hopefully we can have some more during the year, and hopefully Manchester United can win the EPL.
I got my new Man United shirt this morning, so I'm very excited about my Cavani shirt. And, yeah, as long as we keep signing these players, I'll be very happy.
Oh, I think we're threatening. I think it could be our year. I better be careful. That's a commentator's cue. Hey, Noel, thanks so much.
That sounds like a Warriors statement, man.
yeah. Okay, we'll stop there. Okay, on that note, have a great week, rest of the week, Noel. Cheers.
Thanks, Kevin.
Cheers.
Take care. Bye. Ciao.
Good. He's a good bloke, Noel Barclay, is it? And he's very, very honest in his opinions, and that's why I like getting him on there, especially when we talk about New Zealand football. Well, next up, we have the panel of Patrick McKendry and hopefully the Silver Tongue, Silver Fox, Sean Summerfield. So we'll just play a bit of music. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Review. So now it comes the exciting part of the show, the really informational part of the show, the panel. They're actually former flatmates in Invercargill, and also former St Thomas's boys, and they're both two good mates of mine. Please welcome the Silver Tongue, Silver Fox, Sean Summerfield.
G'day, mate. G'day, Paddy.
And, of course, G'day, the one and only Patrick McKendry. Well, guys, how you going? Hope you've all had a good weekend. Great win by St Thomas's over Christ. I'll just get that in if Mark Watson is listening. But I have to just get into it. Olympics. Wow, this has been a fantastic Olympics for New Zealand so far. We've had rowing, we've had sevens, we've had Dame Vale, we've had Dylan Smith in the trampolining. What's your thoughts on it, guys?
Hey, well, first of all, Eamon, award-winning journalist like Patrick deserves a better intro than Patrick McKendry.
Your effort is
pitiful.
Well, he was here last week, unlike you, so don't even start.
Exactly.
Yeah, and he got a fantastic introduction, didn't you, Patrick?
Yeah, I did. Thanks, Eamon. I appreciate that. And hi, Sean. Great to hear you again, mate. And, thanks for that protest, albeit not really necessary.
Okay, come on, we've got to talk, boys.
I'm going to just chuck something left field. It's probably nothing new or anything, but, you know, a lot of cool things have been happening. Val was amazing, but me, I keep watching Ruby Tui's interviews over again, guys, and I reckon she epitomises everything that's great about the Olympics, about rugby, about sevens, about that women's sevens team, and about New Zealand. Where are you guys on that?
Yeah, look, I agree, Sean, and I think the Sevens team as a whole, I guess, kind of epitomised Ruby Tui's spirit. They take their craft really seriously, but they don't take themselves too seriously. They have a lot of fun, and they had a lot of fun in winning gold. What a tremendous effort, and just so great to watch. You know, their personalities coming out on the field as well as in the post-match interviews. Just absolute champions. Really pleased for them. But they'll definitely be a highlight of my Olympics so far.
You said a BBC one. She was saying that they actually helped fundraise for Great Britain to get to the Olympics.
Incredible, wasn't it? It just shows their I guess their empathy with their opponents, as well as the tight knit sort of sisterhood of the group, just brilliant to see.
I think for me, you know, seeing that Ruby Tui interview was fantastic, and it just explained what we are in this country. We're serious, but we like to, you know, we like to relax and we like to enjoy ourselves. And, you know, watching that Olympics, one of the things I am going to say, gentlemen, you know, and I saw a great article in the New Zealand Herald by Dylan Cleaver when he spoke about Dame Valerie Adams. She was a different Valerie. She, you know, when you first met her, she was, you've both interviewed her, you know, she was very confident, but she showed a real human side to her, which, you know, the emotion of her winning a bronze medal, you know, the Valerie you would have known 10 years ago would have hated getting a bronze medal. This Valerie is happy just to be there.
I remember Patrick, 2002,
sorry,
the Commonwealth Games. We were terrified of her. She was actually quite a night once you got through, but she had quite a terrifying persona. She's just a completely different person.
Yeah, she was quite intimidating. Speaking of which, that Raven Saunders, the American, looks like a villain out of a Marvel movie, the woman with the face mask. Extraordinary. But Val, look, she's developed, hasn't she, as a human being. She's now a mum with two young children. Obviously, this is her final Olympics, and to see the joy with which she concluded that competition with bronze, just fantastic. What a legend of the sport, and what a true Kiwi treasure.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, then we look at the rowing. Wasn't that fantastic? Emma Twigg's story's just been amazing. But the men's eights, did any of you guys see that coming beforehand?
You hoped, but you didn't expect it, did you, Patty? Or did you?
No. But I guess when you have Hamish Bond in the boat, that's going to help. But he himself said afterwards that he sort of thought they might get first, but then again, he perhaps thought they might get last as well. So, no, I didn't pick it. But, yeah, what a great sort of 50 minutes, wasn't it? A 50-minute morning when New Zealand won gold, then silver, then gold again. Just brilliant on the water.
And that's one of the good things about the Olympics. And, of course, then you have the surprise medals like the Michael Venus and Marcus Daniel. And then you have this young trampolinist, Dennis Dylan Smith, originally from Tianao. And it was quite funny watching the commentators trying to pronounce Tianao. It was actually amusing. But, that, you know, you see surprises like this.
Yeah, exactly. And almost as funny as hearing the commentator trying to say Waikato, actually. Dylan Schmidt, he popped into Devonport Primary just before heading over to Tokyo to talk to the kids. One of my kids goes to Devonport Primary still, and Daniel, my son, was pretty taken with Dylan, and he was a big observer watching his routines the other night. Just brilliant, and thoroughly deserved. I mean, what a dangerous sport it is too, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think we saw two competitors sort of fall onto the padding of the trampoline there in the final. You've got to be pretty brave to do that sport.
Oh, you certainly do. You wouldn't get me on there. Well, first of all, the size of me, and secondly, I'm really scared of heights, guys. So, yeah.
I said that Val was terrifying or intimidating, but you, the heights they get,
scary.
Just, the physics of it scares the bejesus out of me.
Yeah. Certainly does. Well,
yeah, I think they're up about 10 metres in the air, aren't they? So,
strain on their legs and their knees.
Certainly is. We'll move on to a bit of rugby. Lions versus South Africa. South Africa are back, have tied the series up. What were some of your thoughts on that, Patrick?
Firstly, I did watch that game pretty closely, actually, in the test in Cape Town. Yesterday morning. What a mean-spirited match that was. So much niggle, so little ambition showed by either team. At that level, and especially with the Lions, it's all about winning, but my goodness, what a tedious kickfest. I think the first half lasted about 64 minutes, you know. I think I want to go out on a limb here and suggest that this Lions team is a reflection of its head coach, Warren Gatland. Thin-skinned, bordering on paranoid. I just think it was pretty poor, really, to be honest. But, I mean, the good thing is, set up for the decider on Sunday morning, so there'll be a few more eyeballs on the TV, I guess. But, I hope both teams play with a bit more ambition in that third test.
Yeah, well,
there's a lot of dirt too, Paddy.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, it was going.
And they're like really thuggish.
Yeah. Just... And I see Sinclair, the Lions prop, has been cited for biting now as well. And if he's found guilty, he'll get at least 12 weeks ban. And he's got quite a big track record too. So it's going to be interesting to see how that transpires.
Well, there was that niggle after that, the player going under the pie catch, and the Lions' first five went down when the box hooker came flying into him. Was that Hollywood, or do you think there should have been something on that?
A bit disappointing, to be honest, from the Springboks hooker. That was a real cheap shot, but it wasn't really even mentioned on the commentary. As you say, there was a lot of niggle, and I'm surprised that only one player was cited. There could have been half a dozen at least.
Yeah, the knee on the neck was one that got me as well. Yep. But I've got to say, at least the box finished with an awesome try.
They certainly did.
Yeah, they won with 2-0, didn't they? And so they were deserved winners. And in the end, you know, after losing the first test, being physically dominated by the Lions, they just turned the tables in that final quarter. And, you know, scrummage-wise, they were just all over the Lions and just showed their true power. So, it sets it up nicely for the third test.
Certainly does.
A question on this, guys. How would the All Blacks team, if they had to line up against the box in the way they were playing, how would they go tomorrow?
Pat, you can start it off.
I think
it looked pretty ferocious.
That's a good point you raised, Sean, because the Springboks have come into this match having played one, into the series having played one international since the World Cup in 2019, and that was against Georgia due to COVID restrictions. So they've come into it really cold, so no surprise they've lost that first test, and they've improved significantly to win the second. But you're right, I mean, the All Blacks look pretty rusty, didn't they, against Tonga and Fiji? So you'd have to say, I guess it would depend where the test was played. The All Blacks would have a big advantage if it was played in New Zealand, but certainly if it was in South Africa, I think the box would be favourites for sure.
I think we'd struggle.
Glad I've got tickets to that game at the start of October.
Yeah,
hope it goes ahead.
Yeah, if it goes ahead, I really think we'd actually struggle against the Springboks at the moment. I just feel that this South African side is going to be more battle-hardened after this series. I just feel that, you know, like, if it comes down to a tight forwards game, I just have that feeling that they may just have it slightly over us. And also, I just feel they're a bit, just that little bit tougher, boys. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
I'm not sure. Hopefully, you know, New Zealand's going to have 2 Bledisloe like Cup tests against Australia, you know, all things being equal in New Zealand. So get those out of the way. Hopefully the box can come, you know, through quarantine and all the rest of it into New Zealand. But I think having played Australia twice, the All Blacks will be far better prepared for the Springboks. And I do think that the All Blacks will be favourites to beat them in New Zealand.
Okay.
But you're right, I mean, it's going to be a heck of a test up front. And if it goes ahead as playing in Dunedin, it'll be the 100th test between the two nations. So, it's just going to be all on, isn't it? It's going to be absolutely brilliant.
And
you play to your opposition too, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. And the All Blacks will lift, won't they? Just like the Springboks will lift. So, yeah, I think with Brodie Retallick back, with more game time, combinations becoming more settled, I think the All Blacks will improve fairly quickly.
Okay, so yeah, but I'd have to agree with both you fine gentlemen. Well, we'll move on to a bit of F1 here. Sean.
Well, mate, I tell you what, after talking about the way the box and the Lions second test was, I think the opening stretch of the F1 race in Hungary was exactly the same.
Yeah.
It was just insane. Bottas, bad start, it was damp track. He missed his breaking point, and he managed. So it was like in bowls where they send that big high speed ball through to clear the bowls away, and he knocked off somehow both Red Bulls and a McLaren in one go, and caused a bit of a chain reaction that also got rid of a couple of other cars. Just insane. If you were a cynic, you would have said it was well planned, but I think it was just poor driving on his part. But the upshoot was the whole field got brought in to clear up the track, red flag. They start off the race again, except after the formation lap, every other car except for Lewis Hamilton pulls into the pits to change their tyres. Hamilton starts the race on his own. He's the only car on the track. He has to come in a lap later because he's made the wrong call for tyres and ends up dead last. And we end up with Esteban Ocon, the Frenchman, winning in the Alpine, which was just sort of incredible. You know, French team, French driver. Lewis Hamilton fought back for third. Great battle with Carlos Sainz Jr. I was a bit gutted in a way. Seb Vettel, finished second in Aston Martin. But as things would have it, you have to finish with a litre of petrol left in your tank so they can sample and make sure you weren't cheating. And he only had a third of a litre. They couldn't extract any more fuel out, so he got demoted. So Lewis Hamilton moves up to second, and as a result, he now leads the championship by 8 points from Verstappen, who was only able to finish ninth. So there you go. Bottas, through a roundabout way, helped his teammate. I don't think he meant to, but it only adds fuel to that fire in Formula One.
It certainly does. Well,
wow. I'm looking forward to that that episode on Drive to Survive on Netflix. Look.
Yeah. It's like they're writing the script, aren't they, Paddy?
Yeah, exactly. And I see that Lewis Hamilton, hasn't been feeling 100%. He thinks he might have long COVID. He might still be suffering from COVID, which is quite extraordinary too.
Yeah, either that, because they tried to play it down. One week sort of said maybe all he was trying to, he wasn't used to having to pass so many cars. he had to come from last. He had to work a bit harder. But he wasn't good after the race. He, on the podium, it looked like he was a bit of a sad sack, which, you know, for all Lewis's faults, he's actually a pretty sporting guy. He obviously wasn't feeling great. So I hope that's not the case, because you hope that you get over this stuff and it goes away. It doesn't bode well for the rest of the world.
By the looks of it, guys, this COVID, we've just seen another new strain coming in from South America. So touch wood, we can keep it out of New Zealand for the meantime. Guys, just before we go, how many more goals can we win at this Olympics potentially?
Well, I see, I was just watching Lisa Carrington before, New Zealand's kayaker extraordinaire. She sails through her heat. And she's in four events, I think. She just qualified straight to the semi-final in her specialist K1 200 metres. So she did a pretty good time too without even trying. So, look, you'd have to assume she's going to win at least one gold. The track cycling's coming up. The Kiwis tend to do quite well in the sprint events there. Maybe Tom Walsh might go okay. Yeah. So I think, you know, there's still gold out there for New Zealand for sure.
Yep, sure.
I'm going to say five, guys.
Whoa.
Wow.
I reckon you're dead on, Paddy. Lisa Carrington, I can't see her not getting at least two. I think Tom Walsh is amazing. One for the cycling, I think Burling and Chuck.
Yeah.
Burling and Chuck, yeah, of course.
And, of course, maybe the equestrian. Maybe we can grab a medal there. But, yeah, anyway, gentlemen, I have to say, it's been fine talking to you young middle-aged men, as we all are, and hopefully we can keep this going for next week.
Sounds good. Thanks,
James. It was great. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great rest of the week. Okay, that was the panel. Wow, great way to 20 seconds to go. Well, we get ready for Berlin and Chukin racing for gold tonight and the 49ers. Lisa Carrington, as Patrick just said, great chance of a few gold medals. And of course, next week we'll have AJ back. Hopefully something on the netball. And